From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. The gross domestic product takes a serious nosedive in 2008's fourth quarter. Will an almost $900 billion stimulus package help pull us out of the rut of recession? Spend or cut taxes? That is the question. And for answers and more on the state of the economy, we turn now to our regular contributor on all things dollars and cents, Keith Reed. Hey, Keith.
Hey, Tony. How's it going?
It's going great. Thank you very much. We got some pretty grim economic news, however, on Friday, the weakest gross domestic product since Michael Jackson released the Thriller album in the early 80s. President Obama called the situation a, quote, continuing disaster for working families. Now, the GDP shrank nearly 4%, Keith, in the fourth quarter of last year. Help us unpack these figures. What does this GDP slide mean to the average person?
Well, what it means is that the economy is not growing. It's continuing to contract, and like we've said, Tony, over the past few weeks here and past few months, that there is not really there's not really any end to this in sight. When you've got basically shrinkage of the GDP, you've got to remember, and again, this is something that we've talked about. What was driving the economy for so long wasn't really production. It wasn't how much in terms of goods and services we were producing as an economy, so much as it was consumer purchases and particularly large purchases that you had to borrow money for that was keeping the economy afloat. When that went away, when lending in particular went away, there was no way for the economy to rebound because so many other sectors had already shed jobs or sent jobs overseas, or much of the economy had shifted to service sector jobs that just didn't pay like the skilled labor of the past. This is what we've wrought by borrowing so much and continuing to, as a society and as an economy, continuing to move jobs away from those that are well-paying and can sustain middle-class families.
Let's talk about the stimulus package that is getting so much ink these days. The U.S. House, of course, passing one version of the package last week. The bill is now making its way through the Senate. We're talking about more than $800 billion. It's said to be roughly 75% spending, 25% tax cuts. Is this an effective ratio? The Republicans certainly don't seem to think so.
Yeah, and there's actually some doubt, maybe not in on the Democratic side of the aisle in Congress, but definitely from some more liberal economists and some folks who are just observers of this, even on the Democratic or on the more liberal leaning side, that maybe this isn't the right balance or maybe this isn't the right way to go. I think the problem is that you just haven't seen such trouble with the economy in so long that nobody really knows which way is the best way to go in terms of fixing things. I mean, when you're looking at, I think you said it's about $819 billion. I actually heard this morning that what they're debating in the Senate is closer to $900 billion. Do you need more tax cuts? Do you need less spending? I think the spending is what really has to be examined here, because as we heard last week and as the Republicans really hit the Obama administration and the Democrats in Congress on, there are some things being put in this bill that don't have anything to do with economic recovery. And you can debate, for example, the merits of family planning and whether or not that's a good thing or something that the federal government should be participating in. But I think no matter what side of the aisle you're on, how much does that really have to do with the economy? And you could argue, well, that was only $200 million. Yeah, but there are a lot of little $10 million, $200 million, $500 million projects that are being put in this bill. And that's where the debate comes in terms of how much the government can really afford to spend and how targeted that needs to be.
Here's the thing, though. I don't understand why, and I'm sure that there are a lot of people listening who don't understand why there is such disagreement over even economists about this, because can't it be proven one way or the other whether or not spending works better than tax cuts?
It really depends on who you ask. I mean, there are think tanks out there that can produce research that will show almost anything. I think we saw, for example, in the last administration, that there were all manner of right leaning think tanks that could produce data that showed that if you were giving tax cuts to the wealthy and you subscribe to a trickle down formula for the economy, that the economy would recover. Well, now we saw that didn't work. There were a number of opponents on the left side of the aisle that said that, no, that's crazy. If you're going to do tax cuts, you've got to do tax cuts that are smaller than this. You can't do it as we're spending so much money on the war. And if you're going to do tax cuts at all, you got to give them to the middle class. You know, you can find people that produce data on either side of the aisle. And I think what you've got to have is some real pragmatic, nonpartisan relationships being forged, in which they look at this bill and say, "Okay, we're going to have to spend. We're going to have to cut taxes, or at least not raise them. What's really the right ratio?" And stop arguing over it, so that people can begin to recover.
Let's talk about something pragmatic. Let's just presume that the stimulus package has passed in some form, and it has some combination of tax cuts and spending, and this infrastructure can begin. So my question is, in terms of these shovel-ready projects coming out of the stimulus package, how quickly would you say that we could see job creation in this area?
I think it could happen pretty quickly. If you look around the country, especially in some of the Rust Belt states, what you've got is a situation where many of these projects have been put on hold for a while, because it's been a long time since there was a real increase, or at least a big increase, in terms of federal spending on infrastructure projects. Just here in Ohio last week, you had Governor Ted Strickland talk about bringing, in his State of the State address, talk about bringing back passenger rail service between cities in Ohio, and he wants to see that happen. That would be the first time in, I believe, more than 40 years that it happened. It would be a great thing for the economy to see that. It would be a great thing to see rail, as an example, happen in many places around the country where there are regional rail transportation networks that have been on a drawing board and have been discussed, that would bring some people back to work over a considerable amount of time. But the federal dollars simply haven't been there to do that. I think in those situations where the plans are already on the drawing board and you could just take them off the shelf and put them in place, that could happen fairly quickly, within months. Not even, you know, you're looking at maybe 3 months at the latest that you could start putting some people to work.
Let me shift the conversation just a little bit to this, because in the meantime, while people are waiting for Congress to fight this out and hash it out and actually get those dollars flowing, people are robbing Peter to pay Paul, and sometimes they're robbing Paul as well. We've got all these stories now coming out about smaller Ponzi schemes, a.k.a. Bernie Madoff. They're called mini Madoffs. Madoff, of course, the rogue investor accused of bilking folks out of $50 billion in an elaborate pyramid scheme. One of these is down in the Florida area by a guy by the name of George Theodule. What was he up to, if you know, and why are people getting sucked into these scams?
Well, essentially, what's happening in every one of these cases, not just down in down with Theodule, but or up in New York with Madoff, but essentially, what a Ponzi scheme is when somebody comes to you and says, "Listen, I got a great deal. I've got some good investments for you," and you trust that person. You give that person your money. Only that person doesn't really have an investment, or that person has an investment that is performing poorly, not in the manner in which he told you that it would perform, and bringing you back the returns that you expected to get. In order to cover the losses, that person then goes down the line to the next investor. They take their money, they cover the losses that happened with your money, with the money that they got from the last person, and so on and so on and so forth. Eventually, there's an end game. There was a New York Times story that essentially summed this up by saying, listen, at the end of the day, nobody wins in a Ponzi scheme, because at a certain point you've taken money from so many people that nobody else is going to give you any more money. And when the money runs out, you've got nothing to cover the losses. There never was an investment, or there never was a good investment. I think one of the reasons, Tony, that we're seeing so many of these come to light has really nothing to do with the fact that people are being that this is happening more often, so much as it is the fact that people are just paying attention to it more. You know, you watch the news and somebody says, oh, there's a stolen car ring. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's watching for people breaking into cars. Well, people break into cars every day. But when you hear about it on the news, people start paying attention. There have always been Ponzi schemes. This is not new. This has been going on for forever, has been happening to investors. And it'll continue to go on. But we're just aware of it because the Madoff scandal was so large and so visible.
You know, it's funny. I was listening to your description of the Ponzi scheme as our time is running out, and I couldn't help but think that there must be somebody listening to your description who is saying, wow, the stimulus package, that sounds like a Ponzi scheme to me.
the government covering its own losses by printing more money, which covers losses in which it prints more money. Hey, you know, you could make that argument. I'm not going to make that argument, but somebody might.
Yeah, I mean, we're waiting to see what the end game is going to be with regard mm-hmm. to that. Really quickly, do you think, or do you, there's no way to know, but do you have a sense that the Senate is likely to pass some version of a stimulus bill this week?
Yeah, I think they will. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to end up being as large as they're talking about right now. But, I mean, look, the numbers in Congress are what they are. The Democrats can pass this. They don't really need Republican support to pass it. It would be better if they did have some sort of a consensus across party lines. But you know, we know what the numbers are in Congress right now in both chambers and President Obama wants this to happen. So, yeah, they can pass something if they want to.
All right, Keith, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tony, and congratulations to my Super Bowl champion Steelers, by the way.
Yes, they are the champions. That was Keith Reed, our regular economics contributor. You can find more of his financial wisdom online at Keith Reed's Money Corner. He joined us from the studios of WCPN in Cleveland.